colleagues of mine had an idea for a 24/7 comprehensive crisis care organization for folks to be able to access whenever they had the need. So this was seen as, you know, pie in the sky stuff. And you mean to tell me that you want to create a service that is in every community around the country that you can walk into at any time 24/7 when you're having a mental health crisis? And that was what my colleagues presented to Congress. 13 years later, I'm happy to say that that is very much happening. It's over 500 certified community behavioral health clinics across the country, operating in 46 states, provide in-depth crisis services, same-day access, mobile crisis response. So basically, I would love to see that in Ireland.
Welcome to the Digital Irish Podcast, where innovation meets heritage and global impact is the name of the game. I'm Dave Byrne, your host on this journey through the stories of Irish innovators, entrepreneurs, and creators. We are here to showcase the incredible talent that Irish visionaries bring to the world. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. Today, we are going to talk about a very important topic, specifically mental health. We are actually going to be talking to Sarah Surgener, the Senior Vice President of Marketing and Communications for the National Council for Mental Wellbeing. Now, before I get on to Sarah, let me tell you just how important the National Council for Mental Wellbeing is here in the US. They work to improve access to mental health and substance use treatment. They lobby for policies that ensure everyone has access to high quality mental health care. They support and strengthen organizations that provide that health care. They work to break down the stigma surrounding mental health across the United States. Millions of Americans experience mental illness each year, and many in Ireland also do as well. So organizations like this are crucial to make sure that people don't face significant barriers to get the help that they need. And a big part of that mission is making sure that this is communicated effectively across the United States. And that is the role that Sarah plays. And Sarah herself has had a fascinating career path. She started out working in television production in Ireland, then transitioned to mental health communications, and ultimately became a champion for accessible and openly discussed mental health care. So with a successful career spanning both the US and Ireland, Sarah just brings such a wealth of experience and a unique perspective to the table. And throughout our conversation today, we'll delve into Sarah's career journey, exploring her transition from television to mental health advocacy, what drew her to TC, which is how we got connected, and also the stark differences she's observed in how mental health is addressed across the Atlantic, and what Ireland and the US can learn from each other. So we'll discuss all of this. This is going to get very insightful, and we're going to explore the ever-evolving world of mental health with Sarah. So I'm going to drop you straight in it. Sarah, thank you so much for joining on the podcast today.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Dave.
You've been working for many years in the mental health space. However, previously, you were actually working in the television industry. How did this pivot come about?
Well, it wasn't planned, that's for sure. I always wanted to work in television and studied media in university after school. And eventually, 6-8 months after leaving college, got a freelance role in RTE. And worked there for quite a few years in various different roles. It was the be all and end all for me to work in RTE. So I was thrilled to do anything that was thrown my way, but always freelance. And then when I started working on a daytime show called The Afternoon Show, I was in the role at the time of a segment producer, which at home was called a researcher. And I was in charge of the health set, if you like. And it was around the time that that awful case of Madeleine McCann going missing, and we had a gentleman come on talk about child safety. So he introduced himself to me. I brought him into the green room, got chatting to him. He went on the show and did his interview. It was one of those. It was the first year anniversary of Madeleine McCann, and the world was still rocked by that. So he was giving parents advice and that kind of thing. But when he was leaving, he did happen to say, listen, you know, I've moved away from that child safety space and into the mental health space. And now I'm you know, looking after an independent mental health service here in Dublin. If you'd be interested in going to go for an interview for a communications role. And I kind of smirked and said, thanks for thinking of me. But, you know, I work in TV. And I have to be honest, I came home and said it to my husband, who kind of encouraged me to look at the job description and maybe have a think about it. So the long and short of it was I left RTE and went to work at St. Patrick's Mental Health Services and set up the communications and fundraising department there, and was really very, very happy in that 9-to-5 role in a different world, really. You know, you go from the media live television environment to a mental health hospital, it couldn't be any more chalk and cheese. moved over there, and it really was the best move, both career-wise and personally.
You mentioned this, that it's chalk and cheese in regards to what it looks like on paper in your career. But did you find that there was any specific skills or techniques from the television industry that you found to be surprisingly transferable over into the mental health field?
Well, I always say that working in a live television environment is the best experience for any job. It's roll your sleeves up, get stuck in, and you really do have to make it work. And you're only as good as your last segment, if you like. So it doesn't end. It's not a 9-to-5. You're constantly kind of trying to improve the performance, whether it's your performance or the performance of the guests that you're bringing on the show. So it is all encompassing. And I think what really worked for me was moving into St. Patrick's and being able to understand the logic or the mindset of folks within the media and what they may be looking for, you know, with a story, whether it be for television or whether it be for print journalism. It was just really helpful to have come from that world to now be on the other side and be pitching to those folks and knowing exactly the limitations that they have, but also make their lives easier. So a pitch looked much different having worked in television for 6 or 7 years. Lots of different skill sets and lots of different techniques. But I think the main one for me was, you know, arriving in somewhere like St. Patrick's and realizing there's so much untapped opportunity here to tell the story of mental health in this country. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, once I got in there and realized and had the full support of, you know, the senior leadership team there, who are still, I'm still in touch with today, but, you know, to go and to bring cameras behind those walls, to launch campaigns that promoted destigmatizing mental health services and destigmatizes talking about mental health at all. I mean, at one stage we had Ireland AM in the hospital as well as a live radio studio happening for World Mental Health Day, and an array of musicians doing all sorts. I mean, they had never seen the likes of anything like this before. But I suppose my reaction would have been, why not? The world needs to see that mental health is as important as physical health, and a mental health hospital is as needed and as important as a physical health hospital. So that stigma around a mental health hospital, that was my main aim, to get rid of that and to bring cameras behind those walls into those locations, and to change people's minds and hearts when it came to mental health care in Ireland.
Although you're coming in from the television industry into mental health, it really does seem that one benefit that has come out of that is that you did have almost like fresh eyes, fresh perspective that maybe people who had been working in this industry for longer may not have realized. And it sounds like you were able then to uncover those kind of untapped opportunities because of that new, fresh perspective coming from a totally different industry.
Yeah, I would agree with that, actually. And I think that was a real benefit. And I have to give kudos to the CEO in St. Patrick's for being able to see that, I suppose, in asking me to go for that job, because I would never, ever have looked at a role like that and thought, you know, this is where I will, I will, you know, shine, or my skill set will be applicable. You know, I was production. I was, you know, behind the cameras. And you know, I suppose folks on the other side in strictly communications roles or strictly kind of PR roles wouldn't necessarily look to the production side either. So I have to give it to him, Paul Dillion, who saw the benefit of that. But yeah, you're right. I think, you know, having, first of all, again, I know I've said it, but I do think having a supportive leadership team that is going to work with you and not kind of be turned off when you come to the table with what I will only describe as notions and notions for campaigns that may or may not be workable ideas. And I think the idea of having, you know, people around that table who are saying, well, you know what, Sarah, that won't work because that doesn't make sense because of A, B, C, or D, or that could work, or that's really far out there. Do you think we should take a chance or could take a chance? Do you think our board will agree? You know, so I think there was lots of times along the way where there was learning on kind of on both sides. I think that innovation was, and that's why I stayed there for 9 years. It was constantly reinventing the wheel. There was never 2 days the same. And I think that has to do with not only mental health in general, because it is no two issues or no two mental health challenges are the same. So, you know, how you're treated for anxiety would be different than I'm treated for anxiety. And as a result of that, there's so many stories to tell and so many aspects to how people can be treated. And, you know, no two ways are the same. So I think there was, you know, lots and lots of innovation at St. Patrick's. There still is. I'm still their biggest fan. But certainly in terms of telling the world, you know what, it's OK if you're not OK. And we probably should give the same amount of attention to our mental health as we do our physical health, because we're not great at that. But I do think we have come on an awful lot in Ireland, and the same here in the States. It's taken time and it's an ongoing, it'll never be finished, but it's an ongoing education and information sharing that will change thoughts and change values around this.
I love that. And I want to jump into that at some point. But, you know, before we jump into the changing nature of mental health discourse in Ireland and the US, I'd love to just kind of understand, like, what inspired the move to the US and to DC specifically in the first place.
Yes. Well, my brother, my younger brother and younger sister both lived in the States at the time. And my brother lived here in Washington, D.C., and I did come over to visit him a few times. A couple of things really, I suppose, came to mind once we visited my brother here. People were positive. People were more positive here. There seemed to be more in the way of opportunities. Obviously, the weather for 6 months of the year is fantastic. And I think we just thought, why not? And that's the honest truth. Why not? Because if we don't, we might regret it. So I think the decision was around whether we got a visa or not. And then once we were lucky enough to be awarded a green card, which I found out later was so unusual, as easily as we got it, the decision was made for us. So yeah, we packed up, myself, my husband, my two children. We left jobs, we left mortgages, we left the school system, And we came over here and chanced our arm. And the funny thing was, we moved on the day of my 40th birthday. So life truly did begin at 40. But yeah, we settled in pretty quickly here and moved to Capitol Hill. And what I love, love, love about Washington, D.C. is that sense of community that, you know, you find, even if you don't know people. It is a transient city, they say, but at the same time, we were lucky enough to find a real strong community within our neighborhood, and we haven't looked back since.
You know, that seems to be a very common thread whenever I talk to people in DC. You know, I think everybody acknowledges that it can be a very transient place, but it often adds to a little bit of the culture and like the feeling here of people want to connect with others as a result, because you've got one group of people that are passing through but want to get to know DC, and another group of people that are very proud of the city and are very much willing to meet, engage with others, and continue fostering that community.
Yeah, I think you are, if you're not moving to a country with a job in hand and, you know, support networks set up, I think you have to kind of get a little bit outside your comfort zone in terms of pushing yourself to meet people and do those kind of awkward going to events you don't know anyone. But the difference is, if you're doing it in Ireland, I don't think you would be met with such positivity. Here it's celebrated. So I found that coming to DC, because everybody is from somewhere else, all of our individual cultures and our individual nationalities, or whatever it may be, the differences between us all was celebrated as opposed to thought of as different. And, you know, we really loved. We were the only Irish on our block, as we were called, the Irish on the block, and we loved that.
Amazing.
We had every nationality, every shape and size, every creed, and I suppose every belief system. You know, none of us were from the same cut from the same cloth, as my mother would say, but we were family. We're a community of, yeah. And I just didn't, we didn't have that in Dublin. We didn't have that with our neighbours in Dublin. We didn't have it in the areas that we lived in when we lived in Dublin. And it's really refreshing to have that here, because the people say, you know, Ireland is the most friendliest place. Yes, absolutely it is. But certainly in that sense of new friendships and new communities, certainly it was phenomenal here compared to what we had at home.
You know, you mentioned Ireland is seen as a very friendly place, but you know, one thing I remember in Ireland, especially, you know, in university and you know, as a fresh graduate, there was definitely a stigma around mental health at that time. That was, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And I think one of the things that I found jarring moving to the US, aside from like, you know, some of the things you mentioned there, like the building of community, I really found that while it may not be perfect, mental health did seem a lot less, it seemed to be a lot less stigma around mental health in the US. You know, I would go into work and people would be openly talking about how they're going to therapy, or that they are trying mindfulness, or that they're journaling and they're trying different techniques to make themselves feel better or improve their mental health. Did you notice similar kind of a similar difference, or did you notice any other differences, like when you were coming from Ireland to the US?
Yeah, I think so. I definitely was one of those people, you know, before moving here, saying things like, oh, sure, look, if you move to America, everybody has a therapist. You know, it's a real cynical Irish kind of approach to it. And I definitely have to own having that attitude. But coming here and you realize, actually, you know, everyone should have a therapist at some stage in their life. And Also, I think, and I will say, actually, I think to be fair, mental health is getting the concentration that it should get at home now. And I think a lot more, there's a lot more conversation happening around, the dinner table. And I think it is very much about how are you? How are you really? So I think it has changed even the school system. I think, all the way through in terms of, bringing your whole self to work. We do have a very kind of a outdated at times view of going to work where you bring your professional self and nothing else. But actually, if COVID has taught us anything, it is we bring our whole self. That can involve a mental health challenge. There's no family not affected in Ireland, but there's nobody in the world that isn't affected by mental health challenges at some point in their life. I think talking about it is par for the course here. It's really refreshing. And I think, it's very much at times surface level, but I think as more information and kind of education is done, people are really understanding the benefit of proper mental health care and really kind of working and challenging yourself to improve your mental wellness. For the betterment of you and your family and your workmates and everyone around you. So, yeah, we're talking more, but I want to stick up for Ireland as well and say I think we're going to.
And what could Ireland like learn from the US? Because yes, like Ireland is improving and like it's not like a barren landscape when it comes to this. But is there any kind of best practices or learnings that you've seen in the US that you wish that Ireland could adopt? Or is there any learnings that the US could maybe take from Ireland as well?
I work for the National Council for Mental Wellbeing, and I think folks, colleagues of mine, 14 or 15 years ago, had an idea for like a back of the napkin kind of stuff for a 24/7 comprehensive crisis care organization for folks to be able to access whenever they had the need. So this was seen as pie in the sky stuff, and you mean to tell me that you want to create a service that is in every community around the country that you can walk into at any time, 24/7, when you're having a mental health crisis? And that was what my colleagues presented to Congress. And 13, 12, 13 years later, I'm happy to say that that is very much happening. It's a proven model of care. It's we've got over 500 certified community behavioral health clinics across the country operating in 46 states, and they are what they say they are. They provide in-depth crisis services, same-day access, mobile crisis response. So basically, I would love to see that in Ireland, because I think that crisis intervention piece is very much missing. But in saying that, yes, I could learn from this model, but it's not huge. It's not funded in every state across the United States, and certainly needs more federal backing to make that a reality, that it's available to everyone, at least 100 miles from everyone across the United States. But I would love to see something like that in Ireland. The other thing I'd love to see in Ireland is a recent innovative 988 crisis line, and this was based on the 999 or 911 model. Except you've got a behavioral health, folks over here call it behavioral health instead of mental health. So behavioral health means addiction or SUD, which is substance use disorder, and mental health. So behavioral health is that umbrella term. So I keep jumping between mental health and behavioral health. But the 988 line has a behavioral health care worker on the other end of the phone. And that person on the other end will put you in touch with services in your locality that you can access free of charge. So the beauty of that is that there is enough support and wraparound support and funding for those CCBHCs in those communities to link up with the 988 crisis line and to join the dots. So again, it's not, it's only six states have have approved funding for it. There's lots more in the pipeline. It definitely needs more federal funding, but I'd love to see that in Ireland too, a crisis line like the 988 model they have here.
That's such a great idea. And like, it really does feel like something that could be so massively beneficial. I mean, is there, that seems like such a promising practice to do. Are there other kind of emerging trends like that, that in mental health that both the US and Ireland should be taking note of? Is there any countries like beyond Ireland in the US that you feel like are trying interesting things or doing interesting things?
Well, I think Australia have always led the charge in terms of adolescent mental health services. You know, applaud their efforts. But no, I don't. There's nothing really that I suppose when I think about the Irish health system, there I think there's some brilliant, brilliant folks working in the system, and I think, you know, the Irish government needs to do so much in terms of not only funding, but, you know, providing adolescent inpatient services, eating disorder services. There are just not enough beds. There are not enough clinics across the country. And I think the very basics have to happen at home first. But certainly, you know, the excuse me, but certainly the emergence of that 24/7 one-stop shop piece is the most, I suppose, eye-opening innovation in, and it shouldn't be an innovation, it should be just standard practice, but it is unfortunately an innovation, and wrapping it into the 988 crisis line. And I suppose the crisis line is something that, you know, you kind of feel like any country could do, but the idea of wrapping it into the service providers is the key. And I mean, the United States is in suicide rates go up by 3% every year. And anyone will tell you that the mental health in America is in dire straits right now. So people are really trying all and every option available to them to improve those numbers.
As you're talking, I can just hear your passion for this topic coming through. Like it really is like very evident. And I could hear that you're seeing a lot of like very positive trends in this area, and it's like you're seeing improvements in the field. But what are your specific hopes for the field of mental health this year and beyond? Like, what would you like? What does success look like for you over the next 12 to 18 months?
One of the things that I am involved in and I work on a daily basis is a program called Mental Health First Aid. And our aim is to train 1 in 15 people throughout the United States in this training, which is basically, if you break it down, it's mental health 101. It's to understand and respond to the signs and symptoms of mental health and substance use challenges. And we are in colleges, we are in schools, we are in workplaces, and we've got kind of first responders, community oriented training sessions. So for me, what I would love to see in 2024, right now we have trained 3.2 million people in the United States. I want to double that. I want to triple that. I want everybody to be comfortable having a conversation. I want kids in school walking through the corridors, asking their friends how they're feeling, or noticing a behavioral trait and stopping them and, you know, asking them if they wanted to have a conversation. I think, you know, the more comfortable we get with this, the better it is for society as a whole. But also, I think, you know, it's changing the future. The earlier we get our children involved in this kind of training, and it definitely, I've seen how impactful mental health first aid can be on a community or on a school community. So that would be my wish for 2024, to see, importantly, that they double in schools across the United States.
Phenomenal. I mean, again, I love like this aspiration. I love this. I love the direction of this, because this is just Honestly, as somebody who has, utilized like mental health services, gone to therapy, utilized like apps like Headspace, like I know the benefit personally of what this can do for people. And I think it's just such a positive attitude and positive area to be working in to kind of make sure that it's way more accessible for folks that need it. And to your point, it's like nobody is perfect mentally 100% of the time. I think access to these resources is just so valuable. And a great analogy I always heard is like, hey, like even if you're not like totally depressed or anything like that, like practicing mental health is like treating any other part of your body well. It's like exercising well. It's like eating well. You want to be healthy all round. So why not have these resources at your fingertips? So I really just love the work that you're doing here and just the mission that you have and the passion that you have for it. If others are listening to this right now and they're kind of feeling this passion as well and they're thinking about, oh, how do I make a positive change as well? Like, what are some of the things that people could be reading or checking out that could help foster their this inspiration even more so?
Well, I'm a bit of a sucker for any kind of positive literature, to be honest. So I would say read, get whatever you can get your hands on. Never stop learning, always be open. Volunteering is a great way to kind of tip your toes into the water. In Ireland, the likes of Pieta House, always have volunteer opportunities, as I'm sure there are other or brilliant organizations in the same space. But just in terms of volunteering, I think that will, and it depends on what area you want to get into as well, but certainly if there is a will, there's a way, as I always say. And I think, if it's and to quote like Maya Angelou, I don't know if you've heard of her, but I'm a big fan of her work. And when she used to say, what you say, people won't remember what you say or what you did, but they will never forget the way you made them feel. And I really truly believe that the people that work in mental health care, both in all over the world, but United States and in Ireland, are absolute angels. They bring their whole self to work every day. And they it is a privilege to work alongside these folks. So if you feel you have a calling, I think getting volunteer work would be, I suppose, the obvious one for me.
I really appreciate you taking out the time and speaking today to share these insights, share your experience, but also provide that snippet of advice for anybody that can also make a positive difference. So, Sarah, just I can't thank you enough for joining on the podcast today.
Thanks a million.
And that is it for today's episode. A massive thank you again to Sarah Surgener for joining us on today's podcast and sharing her insights and knowledge. I think you can all agree it is such a hugely important topic that she's working on. And the work that she's doing is truly fascinating, truly inspirational. So thank you again, Sarah, not just for joining us, but for all the work that you're doing. To you, the listener, we have a couple of things before we leave you. Firstly, we held live events in both London and New York last week. London, we had an event focused around sustainability featuring Neil Dunn from Polymateria. In New York, we had Garoja Rourke from Spotify. If you head over to digitalirish.com, we are going to be posting videos and highlights from these exciting events. If you are also interested in attending future events, digitalirish.com is the place to find out details. So please check out the website. It's also a place to subscribe to our mailing list and connect with the rest of the Digital Irish community. Finally, if you enjoyed this episode, please do us a favor and share it with your friends and colleagues. Don't forget to subscribe to the Digital Irish podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. We'll be back soon with another fantastic episode. Until then, stay safe. See you soon.